For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Tonight, we will have a sangha talk from Douglas Floyd, who's our head Doan and member of our practice council, and a koan guy. So, welcome.
And, thank you.
Thank you, Douglas.
Good evening. Everybody got a copy of the koan? Good. I thought we would talk about the second case in the Blue Cliff Record. It's been translated by the Clearys, and they've titled it, "The Ultimate Path is Without Difficulty." Let's just read through the case without going through the pointers and the commentary. Zhao Zhou, teaching the assembly, said, "The ultimate path is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing. As soon as there are words spoken, this is picking and choosing. This is clarity. This old monk does not abide within clarity. Do you still preserve anything or not?" At that time, a certain monk asked, "Since you do not abide within clarity, what do you preserve?" Zhao Zhou replied, "I don't know either." The monk said, "Since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say that you do not abide within clarity?" Zhao Zhou said, "It is enough to ask about the matter. Bow and withdraw." So this is a koan in which Zhao Zhou talks about one verse from a poem attributed to the third ancestor, Sun Zan, called "Trust in Mind" or "Trusting Mind." It was written probably in the 6th century, so that was about 300 years before Zhao Zhou himself. So there was some history, and there'd clearly been plenty of commentary on it by Zen teachers, and there's continued to be a lot of commentary. Zhao Zhou opens saying, Zhao Zhou teaching the assembly said, "The ultimate path is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing." The quote is, this is the first line of the poem, the Xinxin Ming. And the next line, it goes, "The ultimate path is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing. Just don't love or hate, and everything will be clear and undisguised." This is really, when this was written, this was pretty radical stuff. And it's a very Chinese approach. At the same time, this is really, I mean, if you read this, you can tell it's Taoist talk. When Buddhism was first introduced into China, obviously it was brought in by monks from the flowering of Indian Mahayana Buddhism. But part of the receptiveness of the China was that the China already had a tradition of meditation and a wisdom literature of its own, and a lot of the early translations attempted to find correspondences between Sanskrit terms and Chinese terms. So as we know, Tathagata or Buddha nature frequently was translated as Tao, and that's really what the translated term in this first line is, "The ultimate path is without difficulty." It's really the Tao is without difficulty. You also pick up the Taoist flavor with this, it's without difficulty. I mean, a key aspect of Taoist stories is that the person, the great sage who's in accord with the Tao, does not exert resistance. You know, there are the stories in Zhuangzi about the butcher who can, with one knife and a single cut, go through the carcass of a cow without trying hard at all. He's in accord with everything, and so the knife just slips through. And another key aspect is that it's interesting that to be in accordance with the Tao, to follow the great way, isn't expressed as doing something. It's not doing something. It's avoiding, picking, and choosing. In spite of all the Taoist talk and the references to the Tao and the ultimate path, though, I really think of this koan as Jiazhou not so much as an emptiness master, as a meditation master. This is, for me, it seems like this koan is issues in Zazen. And the line is really Zazen instructions. I mean, what is the picking and choosing? It's the mind that all of us experience when we first sit down on the cushions to do Zazen. Our mind is going crazy. We're a little bit in a fog. We're closed in on ourselves, and we're feeling like this person here, and the world is out there, and our mind is going on and on, thoughts and feelings that are all built on picking and choosing, decisions. I like this, I don't like that. At bottom, there's a sense of insecurity, a real sense that of deprivation. We're trying to, we get a real close-up, a clear view of how our mind seeks security and is trying to avoid discomfort and find comfort at the same time. And we're instructed to avoid this, and we do. We learn to sidestep it. We don't stop the flow of thoughts and feelings. They continue. But we're not caught up in them in the same way. And at that moment, the way the Xinxin Ming says, if you just don't love or hate, everything is clear and undisguised. Suddenly, when we've done that sidestep, there we are. We're not quite as closed in and fogged up. It's clear we're here. We notice it, and we realize how the thoughts are flowing and how we have been lost in this fog of thinking. That's great as instruction so far as it goes. But Jiazhou takes us a little bit further, and he says, as soon as there are words spoken, this is picking and choosing, this is clarity. This old monk does not abide within clarity. So we wake up. We're sitting on the cushion, we understand how everything's flowing, how we've been feeling. And a couple of things can happen. One is, we feel our breathing, I don't know, 5 or 10 breaths, and then we slip back again into what we're having for breakfast. There's a meeting coming up. I can't believe he said that to me yesterday. Or sort of, I think, the most devilish thing is we start thinking about our Zazen. I woke up. I'm clear. Look at how these thoughts are going. What am I going to do? I better breathe very carefully. I better concentrate on this breathing so that I stay clear. You've just slipped back into the picking and choosing. You're thinking about the experience. You're not experiencing the breathing in the sitting and the thoughts going anymore. Once you've done that, you're clinging, just as much as you were before your thoughts slowed down and you stepped aside. So Jiaozhou, you end up either trying to hold on to this sense of clarity, or you catch yourself slipping and you try and relive it. Bring it back. So you haven't, you're now trying to recreate an experience rather than sitting right here and now, so that everything is no longer clear and undisguised. And Jiaozhou tells us what you have to do when he says, this old monk does not abide, this old monk does not hold on to clarity. This old monk is just a polite way of saying, I don't hold on to clarity. And that's what we have to do. We have to sit with whatever is going on. We have to sit with the sense of confusion, sit with a sense of fogginess if that's what's there. When the clarity comes, we sit with that and we're aware of feeling clear. And when we start pushing ourselves to stay clear, we sit with that too. So Jiaozhou is suggesting that the clarity he's talking about isn't an experience of clarity, it's an orientation, an openness or a responsiveness to what's going on right now, to fogginess, picking and choosing, to clarity, but not holding on to either one. After he had said, then he challenges his monks and says, do you still preserve, do you still hold on to anything or not? And a monk from the assembly comes up and he's ready to take the challenge. And he says, at that time a certain monk asks, since you do not abide within clarity, what do you preserve or what do you hold on to? What do you keep in mind while you're sitting? So he hasn't quite gotten it, right? And Jiaozhou replies, I don't know either. He's tried to make it clear, right? He's taken the second shot now. He's already said, this monk does not abide within clarity. And now he says, I don't know either. This isn't the I don't know that he doesn't understand perfectly well how our minds do this, how we have this relentless desire to affirm ourselves, to validate our experience while we're sitting on the cushion. What he's trying to do is to push the question back to the monk and not give him descriptions of an experience or descriptions and analysis of how this works. He wants the monk to sit there with his question. But that's not good enough for the monk. He takes another run at it himself. The monk said, since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say that you do not abide within clarity? So he's come back asking him another question, and Jiaozhou says, it's enough to ask about the matter. Bow and withdraw. So he's pushed it back again. Go sit with that question. And sit with the question so that you're not going to write some sort of Buddhist psychology based on how you're sitting on the cushion. This is not an attempt to get the monk to think it all out and to work it all out. He's telling him to go sit with the question and sit with the question, what is it I'm holding on to? It's a pointer back to experience. It's not an invitation to have an intellectual discussion. I this koan sort of has resonated with me because I had a conversation like this, I think, at my first retreat. It was pre-Zen days. And I was living in New Hampshire, and I hitchhiked up to Barnet, Vermont, to go see Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche at what was called Tale of the Tiger then. It's now Karma Choling. And after we had sat and Trungpa Rinpoche had given a talk, he still sat up in his chair and people could come up and talk to him if they wanted. And I had a chance and I came up and I said, I've been sitting here and I have felt incredible energy and incredible clarity. And I left it at that. I thought, okay, he's the enlightened tulku. He's going to tell me, what do you do with this? Or he's going to say, God, this is it. Or he's going to say, you're right on the brink of a huge breakthrough. That wasn't quite what happened. He just looked at me. And he said, yeah. Keep sitting, and that'll go away. So, I think that the thing for us to keep in mind is that there are so many sneaky ways in which we can start evaluating our experience and get back into thinking and away from what we're trying to do. You know, being clear is not necessarily going to feel like clarity. And we can't try to recapture an experience. Zen is not about having a specific experience or having a specific realization or understanding of an idea. We keep coming back to this moment and this experience, this breathing, stepping aside from the thoughts so that we aren't caught up in it anymore and we open out. We aren't this person who's closed in on himself. Here I am, the world is out there, I'm having this experience. Here you are in this moment. And then you start thinking again, and you start feeling your breath again, and you come back over and over and over again. Over and over and over again, we're confused, but then we come back and everything is clarity again. So I'm going to leave it at that, and we can talk about anyone else who's had these sneaky experiences with mind clinging to realization or clarity.
Is it easier to just always assume that you are clean? You know, even, you know, when there appears to be clarity.
I think it's sometimes helpful to, in your sitting, to put a drop a question in there of how am I feeling? What's going on? And especially if we pay special attention to the body, as soon as you start, clinging, you know, it's a tough word to put a finger on, but an awful lot of the time there's some sort of strain involved in what's going on in your body. You'll feel your neck tighten up or your eyes will, you'll notice that you're kind of staring fixedly because you're concentrating on trying to move this zazen over to some experience. Or you're trying to repress your thoughts because they're distracting you and you want to be clear. Something like that. I think it's something. You know, I wouldn't say to be suspicious, but at least be open to that idea. What's going on? How do I feel? every now and then you might ask yourself, what am I holding on to here? Am I trying to accomplish something here? And then just relax into the breath and sitting right here.
Douglas, do you suppose that Jiaozhou abides in not knowing?
I don't think Jiaozhou abides. I think Jiaozhou, like all of us, abides from time to time.
Mm.
And he wakes up to his not knowing.
Only the dude abides.
I think Jiaozhou surfs.
Yeah, I like that.
He surfs.
Yeah.
Riding the wave.
Even that before his time.
I think, this story and those opening lines to the Xinxin Bing are almost hard for us to believe now. It's like Taigen's been speaking recently on the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch, and his discussions of waking up in prajna and samadhi are sort of startling like this. I mean, that the message of these instructions is that, you know, the great way is without effort. That's kind of shocking. We're used to the idea that we have to try very hard and do this for a long time before we experience whatever there is we're supposed to experience. And the message is, it's incredible good news that it's really hard to believe that we can sit here and wake up, and that's a real experience. That's the Zen experience, being awake. But you have to keep coming back to each moment. I mean, we just don't expect and don't believe that what we need to experience is something we experience all the time. It's just something that we ignore because we're having an experience and we don't want to have that experience. So we start trying to cover it up or look away from that experience, looking for something else, instead of opening up to the entirety of what we're doing and feeling and thinking. It's good news, but it's very hard to believe. And while it's very simple and straightforward, it's still pretty challenging, since we do it and we fall away, and we do it and we fall away.
Thank you so much for your talk. This has been the most helpful koan my whole experience of Zen, and it's the one I resisted the most, challenged the most fiercely, and rejected. But it's the most liberating in my experience, and it's just wonderful to be reminded of how valuable this advice is. Thank you very,
thank you
very much for that.
You know, if this sounds right, this message that the great way is simple, is without difficulty, just avoid picking and choosing, sounds radical to us. You can imagine how it sounded to the monks, let's call them the academic Indian scholastic monks, and the sutra teachers who were coming into China a few hundred years before this, but there were still plenty of translations going on. You know, this was written in the 6th century of the Xinxin Ming, and Kumarajiva had only t- started the translation project for the sutras in 400, I mean the 4th century, 200 years, so it would have been a shock to them to hear that, no, we don't do anything, this isn't hard, I just have to stop, I have to deal with, set aside this, step aside in the middle of this flowing of thoughts. That's not right. We have to, we're going to be alive working on this for hundreds and thousands of lives, hundreds and millions of kalpas. We're going to study complex sutras. We're going to study Nagarjuna. We're going to study Yogacara. We're going to study Abhidharma. We're going to learn hundreds and thousands of different kinds of samadhi. Each one of those is going to teach us some specific thing. And when you get down to it, prajna is really learning a philosophical analysis on why things are really hollow in the middle and aren't self-existent things. And to have people tell you that, no, that's great, but that's really not the point, would have been shocking to them. And about this time, you know, there were debates in Tibet. At the Samya Monastery, the representatives of the Indian classical tradition came and debated with a Chinese monk. And you can read about that now. And while the Chinese monk is caricatured a little bit, it's pretty easy to recognize those ideas there. And the Tibetans would still say, you know, well, obviously the Indian classical tradition won. It was a slam dunk. This was heretical stuff. And while this seems sort of abstract, you know, in Japan today, there's still an academic controversy which would say that all of these ideas in Zen are not Buddhism at all. They're all heretical views. So, enjoy your heresy.
Doug, it seems to me like part of the point of this story, though, is that Jiajo is saying that also we can't avoid picking and choosing.
I think that's right. I mean, Jiajo doesn't cling to clarity. Clarity and picking and choosing come and go, and we have to deal with that, face that.
And he says, as soon as we say anything,
yeah,
that's picking and choosing.
Right. And and as soon as, and say anything, I think, you know, since I don't read the Chinese, I keep thinking that it's more like as soon as there is thinking, even.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we start having the experience and we start thinking about the experience, then we slip into picking and choosing.
But you can't abide in not picking and choosing. You can't do it that way. You can't get there by just saying, oh, okay, I'm going to, you know, do the easy way and not pick and choose.
No, I think that's right. I think we don't push away a certain kind of experience. We sit with our picking and choosing, and it will fall away, and clarity will come, and then the picking and choosing will come back, and the clarity will come back. Jim?
There is neither avoiding nor not avoiding.
Yeah.
Even tonight, I'll get thinking while I'm facing the wall, and then like my eyes will start wandering, you know, and I'm like, oh shit, oh yeah, I gotta focus. And then I'm like, wait a minute, what do I have to focus on? Like, you know, what am I supposed to be doing? You know, so I have to be careful and just say, okay, it was okay that I was thinking. I'm not supposed to be doing anything,
you know, this is okay where I'm at right now, and just, and then start breathing. But the initial shock of, oh shit, kind of like falling asleep in class or something, and like I'm waiting, because I know Tyga, you've talked about the story of doing something and your teacher was behind a wall or something, but still yell, and I still wait for somebody or something to kind of, that's wrong, or it's not that.
Yeah, and we keep evaluating our zazen.
Yeah.
And we keep trying to do better zazen.
Yeah, and so I find that, you know, because I'm like, why are my eyes wandering? I do that when I think, but when I'm thinking about something, my eyes wander all over the place. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They have mind of their own. But, you know, so I'm like, stop that. You know, I gotta be breathing, being, you know.
Yeah.
At least you're not like swearing it.
Only in discussions.
You mean you've never sat there and just kind of like, God damn, you did it again? Okay.
So, question. What Tyga said in response made me think, is this just another Zen joke? You know, like, there's no difficulty, just don't say a word. Is it like, you can't get away from the difficulty? Is that sort of what you're saying?
There's two books that Katagiri Roshi talks. One says, one is returning to silence, the other one is, you've got to say something. And so there's no place where, except unless you're the dude, there's no place where you can really abide. There's no place where you can settle, and this is it. I think that's, I don't want to put words into your mouth.
That's right.
So I've moved actually by the intimacy between Jiajiao and this monk, that this is a very kind an intimate encounter. And so in thinking about this, you know, thanks so much for bringing this case up. I hadn't thought about this case in this way, but it feels like it's about intimacy. Intimacy between Jiajiao and the monk, but also intimacy between us and each other and us and our experience. You know, it's just enough to ask. You know, he kind of goes in there and is like, Jiajiao, wait a minute, what do you preserve, dude? You know, so there's this kind of, I want to say, nuzzling of each other. And then it's like, okay, now go back to your seat. And like what Don was saying, you know, become intimate with your eye faculty, you know. And what keeps us from that intimacy is this picking and choosing or holding. But this feels a lot like this case is about intimacy. So thank you.
Yeah. I like that the monk makes a couple of tries.
Yeah.
He really wants to know. He really wants to understand. And on the other hand, I think part of what you're saying is something we appreciate about Jiajiao and all of the stories. He's not the teacher who hits somebody when they have a question as a response. He always has a kind response. It may not be a clear response, but he's prepared to talk to them.
And bringing up intimacy, okay, so the last line just popped out for me. It's enough to ask. That's really important in the story. It's enough to ask. Maybe it's important to ask. So we wonder, where are we in the middle of our sitting? How is this? Where is clarity? Where I don't know. We can't hold on to I don't know either. But somehow, just by asking the questions, this monk has expressed herself.
Yeah, I think it's only in the last year that I've really appreciated maybe holding a question a little bit in Zazen, the open question of what is this or what's going on. we aren't really exercising willpower in Zazen so much, I think, as being willing for certain things to happen, being willing to come back and being willing to experience whatever's going on. And the asking the question is a way of doing that, of somehow arousing the attention, arousing that quality of mind without causing you to start thinking again. And I've really found that helpful over the last year or so.
So the answer is not important, but what's the question?
Exactly. Now he's on first.
No, Louie, you said something like, should I always just assume I'm grasping? While that's very nice, I was thinking I would study the conditions of grasping and of not grasping. Because I think sometimes you're not. You know, sometimes we're not picking and choosing, and to discover that in ourselves and in our environment is really helpful too.
And I think that's exactly right. You find yourself, okay, what am I doing now? You're picking and choosing again, right? You're trying to hunt out what you're doing wrong. It really is devious sometimes, but we can be too hard on ourselves. We just you don't have to be hard on yourself doing Zazen.
Yes.
Getsu mentioned surfing. I think literal. Wet surfing. What I'm in mind of is irregular motion. No particular stability to it, or a continual shifting of weight without any single stance. A more or less random pattern without without coming to rest at an answer.
Nathan, did you have some response?
I was just going to say that in response to what Louis and people were saying about that suspiciousness of what you're doing, I think that where it says just avoid picking and choosing, I think that avoid, the word avoid, can kind of make you think that you need to be suspicious of something. Maybe the meaning is closer to maybe just let go, picking and choosing, or just... Just don't worry about it, or something.
Yeah, the translations are really varied. Sometimes that line is translated as just don't have preferences. Don't be for or against. I think the frequency, if you look at different translations, picking and choosing seems to be something that pops up a lot in people's translations. So I feel comfortable with that translation, but avoid or It's hard to say. I'd be interested in your reading if you had a translation, a Chinese copy of what different ways we might read that sentence.
I have the Chinese somewhere. I can look it up and make some, and pick or choose some translation.
I think if you have the time and run a search for translations of the poem, it's interesting. I think I like it better than Taigen does. But I think there are a lot of lines that come out and speak to me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. And it's very good about don't seek the one or the many. It's this choosing that is the disease. But and there are lots of translations. There are some good ones that'll be side by side. One translation with D.T. Suzuki's translation. It's kind of illuminating to see how different people have approached the same line.
So you're inciting me to choose to study this poem, which I think I will do. Thank you. I'm also moved to pick and choose that we allow ourselves time for tea and cookies. So thank you very much, Douglas, for bringing this teaching for us and this wonderful discussion. And we'll close with the four Bodhisattva vows.